please post your questions because we are going to uphold this rhythm so that we can finish in time at 6 o'clock. And I know I'm going, in fact, to pass on the floor to Cedric. Is there any questions for Séverine and her colleague, or any comments? Not too fast, please. Okay, thank you. je me protège déjà. Alors, c'était très intéressant. Oui. Ah, ouais, bon, alors, vous parlez donc des droits d'auteur pour les mouvements. Qu'est-ce que vous faites donc du son? Parce qu'un mouvement peut être exécuté sur un morceau de musique. Alors, il y a les gestes qui sont protégés par la loi. Mais par exemple, un policier, par exemple, sur la route, lève sa main. Une voiture doit s'arrêter. OK. Ça, c'est quelque chose. Mais si un auteur va se mettre sur la route, il lève la main et demande à une voiture de s'arrêter, la voiture ne va pas s'arrêter. Donc ici, c'est tout à fait donc intéressant de voir ce qui est permis par la loi, ce qui n'est pas permis par la loi, et sur base de cela, ce qui est protégé par les auteurs, par le droit d'auteur, et ce qui ne l'est pas. So that wasn't the question that we had to answer, but it's true that indeed, a gesture with your hand, or, of course, can also express something and should or should not be protected. So that's clear. Now, if you bring this back to a copywriter, everything, in my opinion, will depend on the intention that is behind the movement. And according to me, that is part of the problem, because that the idea to create something is something that is subjacent to giving a copyright to something, a protection to something. But maybe that is not sufficient. But it's true that the question that you put is an interesting question. But that we cannot possibly answer this question, because this question, in fact, is out of the framework. We didn't get the mandate to speak about this. So I have just, in fact, had some moments to reflect. I haven't got much to add, but of course, there are movements that are banned, and there are movements that are allowed. But this, of course, fully exceeds the framework of copyrights, of property rights. Okay, these two persons, certainly if it's a police person, for instance, he is authorized, in fact, by law, make some movements that he may make or that she may make as a police officer, but not any other person. But that was not the subject of our speech. The subject of our speech was to try and check and verify in which way, for instance, a movement with an aesthetic expression can possibly, in fact, lead to the protection by this movement, of this movement, by property rights, by copyrights, vis-a-vis a third party, a third person. And is it, in fact, something to be wished for that this may be done? Because in one way or another, maybe a piece of art should be protected onto the market. But the market evolves and progresses. And does this allow for instance, movements to be protected because they have some expression, aesthetic expression within a certain context and can therefore not be used in a different context. For a police officer, for instance, holding up his hand, it may be argued that from a social point of view, it is wishable that this movement be protected in the social area and should be reserved only to a police officer. The question is to know how far, to which extent, in fact, what is covered by copyrights can be extended to a broader realm, because copyrights and rights of property have been installed to defend a certain, in fact, certain set of things. And so that's a whole debate that you in fact suggest there. Ça peut être étrange, on parle de la protection de mouvements et on parle en fait de mouvements qui doivent être protégés dans le domaine, par exemple, de l'art et de la culture. Oui, mais on pourrait donc étendre cela et sortir du domaine de l'art et de la culture et tout simplement parler des mouvements. Et qu'en est-il, par exemple, de mouvements, certains mouvements qui ne seraient pas tolérés par des dictatures totalitaires? Dans quelle mesure ces dictatures ont-ils le droit de restreindre la réalisation de certains mouvements? Non, as regards the first part of the question, I didn't hear everything. And as regards the second part, namely the problem of folkloric expression, I'm just saying once again, and maybe Severin can go on extending on this. There is a political discussion that states that folkloric art is not protected by rights of property. Why? Because it is folkloric art. It is, in fact, a historical expression. So it is an expression that has evolved through history. It is something, in fact, that is part of a common patrimony. So no, it is not possible to say that folkloric art can be protected by copyright, by property right, because it should be the property of everyone. But then why is it that choreographers are being protected? Why is it then that the idea of common patrimonium is not the same when, for instance, you put yourself in France, in Europe, in the domain of art of culture or not art of culture? There is something political here. It all depends, in fact, to the economic reality that may possibly exploit elements of whether it be dance or folkloric art. If you take folkloric art, that is very much, in fact, a Western idea, copyrights and property rights. What is an author? And that is especially present in the West, but does not necessarily correspond with other continents. Because of economic reasons, property rights and copyrights have been exported out of the West throughout the world. And is used, in fact, to protect what has been invented. But folkloric art has not been invented. The author, in fact, it may have been invented, but the author who is at the origin of this, in fact, is not unique, is not alone. Folkloric art, there's a whole string of persons involved here who, in fact, have worked together. And the copyright concept stands, in fact, tall against this. And also folkloric art is something that has been transferred from generation to generation over centuries and centuries. So it is something that is already belonging to the public area. That is the idea behind it. Folkloric art in this way has been injected into a system that has been generated for centuries, that has been transferred for centuries from generation to generation. So maybe next to the concept of copyright, another kind of notion should be created that could then incorporate the notion of the protection of folkloric art, because there may be the will, for instance, by some people, some populations, for instance, to defend some of their very intrinsic and very native art, and that should then be created. So through a kind of right, it should then need to become possible that economic forces could, for instance, exploit this type of art. But for that, for the protection of this kind of folkloric art, in fact, another kind of notion should be necessary. That, for instance, happened in Australia, where Aboriginal cults were used have it exploited by the media. And in this way, in fact, there had been, in fact, a kind of infringement on the principle of the respect of the basic culture expressed by the Aboriginals. And I didn't understand your full question because the sound was not good, says the speaker. So again, very bad sound. Yes, okay, so they says there are also totalitarian dictatorships that impede some times of movement, that prevent some times of movement, that do not allow some types of movement. Yes, but we said at the outset of our speech the following. Yes, a copyright, what is it? A property right, what is it? It is in fact a notion that prevents the same, that prevents those that is covered by the right to be reproduced afterwards. In any way. And so the existence of a copyright is something that indeed is going to prevent something to be repeated. It is not the copyright as such that is problematic. It is how the copyright is used. And of course, if, for instance, totalitarian dictatorships use some principles to prevent some movements from taking place, from existing, from being repeated, then of course that hasn't got anything to do with copyrights. That is then under the authority of the totalitarian dictatorship, because very often with the idea of the copyright, the idea is pay attention, take care, this movement cannot be repeated, for instance, in any other way, because there is an author that has first invented it. I've got a question. You know, there must be, I suppose, a twilight zones, between your between what you're saying about folkloric art. What exactly folkloric art? Where are the limits? What does it group? And why should it not be protected by copyright in the same way as any other theatrical expression? Or is it because it goes back to the medieval? What is the principle? Is it because it goes back to medieval times? Yes, it can be, for instance, a tribal dances from Zimbabwe. It can be anything, in fact, transferred from the medieval times to today. Yes, it's in fact something that has been existing for so many years and that have been transferred from generation to generation. Whereas, for instance, an author may create something and that belongs to this author, and therefore he should be protected in terms of what he has created, performed, and that is totally different. Folkloric art is essentially something that is transferred from generation to generation over the years, from ancient times till today. So that's essentially different. So the way of transmission is inherent, in fact, to the idea of folkloric art. Folkloric art is there to be transmitted. It has been transmitted, in fact, for years and for centuries, and therefore folkloric art cannot be covered by the system of copyrights. You can say, oh, well, so much the better, because this allows each and everyone to see folkloric art, to profit from folkloric art, to let it be performed wherever one wishes and how one wishes. It is something that is open to the public realm. But it is also dangerous to say, well, this is totally not protected. This is folkloric art, and therefore is absolutely not protected. Well, cynical persons can then maybe pirate, in fact, or hijack, I would say, this patrimonium of folkloric art and misuse it in one way or another. So that's the danger if it's not protected. If it's not protected, it's not protected. And therefore, those that have bad intentions can abuse of the existing folkloric art in a particular way. If something, for instance, is sacred or has been transmitted from generation to generation as something sacred, if all of a sudden, in fact, because of a lack of copyrights, because of a lack of property rights, this sacred thing is being presented in an ill, non-adequate way, well, it will happen. And sometimes some population groups, in fact, do not want to, in fact, their culture to be affected by this, by a kind of overprotection. But some things maybe should be protected. For instance, there's somebody like this, in fact, who was able to earn millions and millions of dollars using, in fact, a song that in other times belonged to a traditional hymn. And he transformed it into a rock song, and he was able to earn millions and millions of dollars. And the original population said, but we don't get anything from this. And we were the ones who created this song in the beginning because it was part of our people, it was part of our culture. So sometimes the population that is at the very origin of the existence of this song, for instance, may feel very frustrated, and then they also want to have part of the copyrights that are the direct result of the use of this song. Many population groups and people's groups start now lobbying at the international level to have property rights and copyrights for part of their culture, or for all of their culture. So it is important to know this and to see what may be the interrelationship with patents. For instance, pharmaceutical companies, experts go down to some tropical areas, look, for instance, at the kind of plants and herbs used by the Aboriginals or the Indians to cure this or that disease, and afterwards they try it out too. And if then they find the right pharmaceutical product, in fact, it is because they abused in the first place knowledge by the local population. So it is, in fact, with regards to all this, that this question must be developed. I know that this is a very recent debate. It is a debate that is now starting to flourish at the international level, but it's very complex and very complicated, because at the same time, maybe you do not want exactly to cover this by property rights or by copyrights, but at least by something. And it must be covered by a notion that is absolutely justified and adequate. It's a complex debate. One last question. I would like to know, so it's when an author writes a book, he uses words, and so the book can be covered by copyright. But what about the scene arts, dancers, they make movements, and why are they not covered? Well, we explained this. Dancers, in fact, are normally only the interpreters. They perform something. They are only important in the secondary chain, because they carry out the movement that has been decided in the first place by a choreographer. So the interpreter, the dancer, in fact, has a margin of interpretation, but within the context of the piece of art that he is to perform. Okay. So the choreographer is going to animate, for instance, the workshop. He is going to identify some dancers that perform a movement in a certain way. He is going to acquiesce to say that is good, that you can do. So, in fact, the interpretation, act of interpretation, is something that, of course, is very important within the framework of the total ballet. And therefore, I say and I argue that the dancer, in fact, is not only an interpreter anymore. It's not only the one who is performing. He becomes a co-choreographer, a co-artist, a co-inventor. And so far, in fact, dancers, in fact, haven't got a full status. So sometimes even they are not even mentioned on the program. It's not always possible, in fact, to put down the names of the interpreting artists, because pass, dancers today, socially speaking, have not yet fully grown to the conscience and the awareness that they would have the right, in fact, to demand that they be regarded as inventors of some parts of the movement, that in fact the work is a collective work of art where everybody is responsible for ensuring that a piece of art becomes something well conceived. So with the possibility, however, for each of the participating members to this ballet, for instance, to express themselves in a certain, in some way. So they are not protected by law. But they will have a kind of secondary protection, but not a first status protection. If you really want these dancers to be at the same level, for instance, with a choreographer, well, then imagine a piece where there's only one choreographer and one artist. I guess that in this case, in fact, the dancer is going to interpret a piece of art that he will have co-created because he makes proposals, because he contributes to being critical about the movement. But yes, indeed, so far it's a fact that dancers, for instance, today only have a secondary status as opposed to the choreographer, for instance, who has got the first status level. And if then this choreography, for instance, is used a second time for a different spectacle, the dancers will not have the possibility to claim that their participation in the first piece cannot be repeated because they did it once and do not want to have it done twice. That is a right that they will never be able to claim. But I know it's a bit a less advantageous situation for the dancers. Well, I thank you very, very much. And now I would like to pass on the floor to